and welcome to this episode of the Money and Politics podcast. Normally would introduce by saying welcome to the latest episode, but considering that it's probably 5, maybe 6 weeks since I last produced one, I think it was a little bit pushing my luck to call it latest. There hasn't been any shortage of domestic political events to write about, from the breakthrough on the Northern Ireland Protocol to the change of leadership in the Social Democrats, and from Bertie Ahern's return to full Fianna Fáil membership to, I think there's been 6 major opinion polls, including one in the North that looked at political attitudes of those who don't identify as nationalist or unionist. Well, there's been no shortage of things to write about. And maybe that's the problem. There's been so much happening so quickly that I haven't had a chance to stand back and make an assessment. Also, the fact that I've been up to my eyes in terms of work, etc., hasn't helped. So where do you start? It's probably easier to start with the most recent Ireland Thinks poll that appeared in yesterday's Sunday Independent and try to work back from there. Though I have to accept the fact that I'm not going to address much of the backlog in just one podcast. So what do we learn from this latest poll? Well, apart from the Social Democrats and Sinn Féin figures, it's quite consistent with the previous 5 polls that we've seen since my last podcast. And those were 2 polls in the Red Sea, one at the end of January, one at the end of February. Ireland Thinks poll plus the earlier one from the beginning of February. There's been 1 BNA poll in the Sunday Times, and there's been an Ipsos MRBI poll in the Irish Times. Now, in broad terms, whether you'll calculate by average or by median or whatever, the 6 polls across that 2-month period show the relative party strengths as Sinn Féin in around 31%, give or take 1 or 2 points. Fine Gael on 22%, give or take 1 or 2 points. Fianna Fáil on 18%, again, give or take 1 or 2. Greens, Labour and the Social Democrats each on 4%, and the other parties and independents combined on 15%. The point here is not that all 6 polls are ad idem on the individual party support. They range. For example, they're in general agreement on the Fine Gael figure, and I think that only ranges from 21% to 23% across these 6 polls. The polls are less agreed on the Fianna Fáil figure. It comes from a low of 15% in the January Red Sea Business Post poll to a high of 24% in the BNA Sunday Times poll. Similarly, the figures for others and independents are aggregated. And I mention this because some of the polls include AIM2 and People Before Profits in the others and independents. So it's unfair to make a comparison from polling company to polling company. So if you pull all those together, that varies from 10%, that's for others and independents in BNA, to 19% in the Red Sea poll in February. That's a big variation. Now, the latest Ireland Thinks poll gives Sinn Féin its lowest poll rating since September 2021. Now, back then, both Ireland Thinks and Red Sea also put Sinn Féin at 29%. And although Sinn Féin's polling average is a point or two down on where it was a few months ago, I personally think it's still too presumptive to talk about this as being an example of Sinn Féin peaking too early. There are some hints at it, but I don't think we should be calling that one just yet. Now, Sinn Féin bosses won't sleep over this one poll and will put the dip in their support down to the Holly Cairns effect. However, they'll be less phlegmatic if what they hope is a temporary Holly Cairns bounce for the Social Democrats turns out to be a trend. They will also have been watching for the last couple of months just how much the emergence of the refugee centres has become an issue, particularly in urban areas. And that is something I think they'll be looking to see. Is that particularly impinging on their voters? And does that maybe explain why their average has dipped 1 to 2 points over the previous 6 months? Now, returning to the Social Democrats, to their immense credit, the Soc Dems took every advantage from the smooth changeover of leadership. Holly Cairns' first leaders' question session was a triumph. A well-constructed, hyperbole-free contribution prosecuted the case against Fine Gael on housing with far greater clarity and focus than any Sinn Féin leader has managed in countless highly charged attacks. By eschewing the inflated rhetoric and personalised attacks favoured by the main opposition party, Cairns spoke calmly and authoritatively for our peers, demonstrating an innate understanding of the housing crisis. And it's an understanding that was also politically astute, particularly in its final lines. She said, Fine Gael has been in government for almost all my entire adult life. The Taoiseach's party first promised to address what was a housing crisis in 2014. 9 years later, it is an unprecedented housing disaster. Promises have been broken, targets have not been met, and lives are being ruined as a result. Cairns deployed some striking statistics to make her case. Earlier in her contribution, she reminded the Taoiseach that, and I quote, between 2004 and 2019, the share of 24 to 34-year-olds who owned their own home had plummeted from 60% down to 27%. And rents had increased by a staggering 95% between 2012 and 2022, while prices in the economy increased by just 11% over that time. Now, if Holly Cairns can keep her party on these well-defined tracks over the coming months and avoid being dragged into culture wars by well-meaning allies, she could well see the Social Democrats hold on to some of the poll bounce. She now has an opportunity to transform her party into a major political force, one that offers reluctant Sinn Féin voters a viable alternative, and a force that may yet compel the Labour Party to reassess its future options. Now, I would agree with a lot of other commentators who said, look, that's, while merger is on the agenda, it isn't going to be on the agenda this side of a general election. I think they're absolutely right. But I think the next general election, whether it comes in late 2014 or very, very early 2015, will be a make or break for the Labour Party. And if they come behind the Social Democrats in support levels, then I think at that point, they'll be the ones seeking a merger and they'll be looking to do it on the Soc Dems terms. But I think for the moment, Holly Cairns is quite right to rule it out. Let's look at the poll in the round, and because what intrigues me most about yesterday's poll is just how strongly Cairns has impacted the Social Democrat support levels. So is this a matter of her being so personally popular that she can drag the party up in the polls, or is there more to it? Well, quite frankly, it's clearly the latter. Now, about 2 years ago, I wondered how was it that an unpopular party, Fianna Fáil, can have a popular leader? And in that piece, which I think was around June or July 2021, I made the point that it was not all that unusual for a popular figure to experience difficulties converting their personal popularity into increased support for the party. As I said at the time, research here in Ireland, but more especially in the UK, shows that a party leader's approval ratings tend to fluctuate far more dramatically than that party's vote share. Looking back on the Sunday Ireland Thinks poll, it reported a doubling of support for the Social Democrats, up from 4% to 9%. That same poll gave Holly Cairns a 43% approval rating. Now that's good. She's clearly ahead of the Labour Party leader. It puts Amanda Bancic on 32%. And the Green Party leader, Eamon Ryan, is at 22%. 43% for Holly Cairns in her first outing is a good result, but it's not stunning, because she's within 2 or 3 points either way of Micheál Martin, whose approval rating is 45%, Mary Lou MacDonald, who's on 41%, and the Taoiseach Leo Varadkar on 40%. And by the way, it's worth bearing this in mind where people are making comments about Micheál Martin's personal popularity, and that's a point I'm going to return to later in this podcast. He is in and around where Mary Lou MacDonald and Leo Varadkar are. They're in around the low 40s. Now, it's a decent performance, and for somebody who's been that long in politics, that's an approval rating to be happy with. But they're not astounding. They're not off the Richter scale. So where do I reckon the Social Democrats' poll bounce came from? I've no doubt that it's down to Holly Cairns, but I think it relates more strongly to what she represents than a mere translation of her personal likability to the party brand. Her selection as leader has given her party a much clearer identity and a sharper focus, as we saw expressed in her opening and the comments I cited earlier, because those opening comments have given her party a freshness and a vibrancy which its previous co-leaders could not muster. The Social Democrats can now define themselves on their own terms, probably for the first time since their foundation in 2015. And these are terms that relate to the real concerns of a generation of voters and not to having settling old scores with others or other political parties. And while it is possible that the next few polls will see much of this week's bounce ebbing away, the old Irish proverb, tus mwa slat na hibre, a good start is half the job, still holds true. Not unsurprisingly, this brings me back to one of my more recurring themes, Fianna Fáil's Micheál Martin problem. I do not use the word problem to be insulting or to be nasty. Party loyalists can cite all the friendly newspaper op-eds and commentaries they want that tell us that Micheál Martin is the most popular thing, person or whatever in today's Fianna Fáil. But the harsh reality for Micheál Martin and for his party is that his personal likability and approval is not translating into increased support for his party. This is not going to change 12 years into his time as leader. In the early years of his leadership, particularly in the period from 2011 to 2016, Martin was assiduous in rebuilding and remaking Fianna Fáil. My own view is that he accepted the possibility across that period that he might be the first Fianna Fáil leader not to become Taoiseach. It was a hard fact for him to face, but once he accepted it, I personally feel he was freed by it, because he chose instead to be the leader who saved and revived Fianna Fáil. Don't forget, Micheál Martin is a historian. He will be very focused on his legacy and in his place in history, not from any vanity, but just an understanding of how history works. So in my view, this all enabled him to be bolder and braver and to take reasonable risks as party leader, particularly when it came to tackling Fianna Fáil's own problems with social issues. And the 2016 election result was seen as proof that he was achieving things, that he was getting there. I personally believe the 2016 election result was somewhat below what Fianna Fáil should have expected. I believe they could have actually done better. But that, in fairness, was the management of expectations. I think there was a legitimate concern within Fianna Fáil headquarters of people getting too far ahead of themselves. Indeed, if you look back to the polling after the 2016 election, you can see that Fianna Fáil topped the polls for a solid 18 months after the 2016 election. Now, this was after the announcement of confidence in supply, after the agreement that Micheál Martin had made to keep Enda Kenny in government, after Micheál Martin's offer of what he called new politics. But I also think something else happened around that time. I believe that Micheál Martin and his kitchen cabinet began to think that not only could Micheál Martin become Taoiseach, but it might even become inevitable that he would. And to achieve this, all they needed to do was to ensure that the party did not misstep or do anything wrong. And a career in senior politics pre the global crash for Micheál Martin had told him that the surest way to avoid making mistakes was strict minimalism. Do as little as possible. So the relative boldness and momentum of the first phase of the Martin era gave way to a dangerous caution. Important projects and initiatives were shelved, not least the plan to make Fianna Fáil a 32-county party. That had been knocking around from the latter stages of Bertie Ahern's leadership. And I let me confess to an involvement or vested interest, shall we say, because I was involved in that process for several years. So this continued through 2011. There was a belief then that it was a little bit too early. I was asked to produce a report in 2012, I think it was, to scope out how this might be done and how that might be achieved. That I did, and it was kind of left lying in abeyance for a short while. Throughout 2015, 2016, some serious work was done. There were some serious meetings on which Micheál Martin was involved. However, by 2018 or so, the goal was slowly abandoned, with Micheál Martin's advisor saying that the party should not be diverting any resources or energy away from the preparations for the general election to do work and anything else. So this desire to do nothing and let things just proceed resulted in Martin's politically inept December 2018 announcement, a solo run announcement, by the way, of an extension to the confidence supply agreement with Fine Gael. And people need to remember that was a move, I think it was done on a Wednesday afternoon. But as far as I remember, it was announced during Dáil's statements on a European Council meeting, because it was a move that caught most of his own front bench colleagues unaware and gave Leo Varadkar's minority government a blank cheque in what turned out to be a year-long run-up to the election. Now, the fact that the Fine Gael leader then squandered Martin's largesse and delivered a horrendous Fine Gael performance in the election when it eventually came about, from which Micheál Martin's faltering campaign could not benefit, only compounds the Fianna Fáil leader's error. By the way, I would highly recommend reading Professor Gary Murphy's recent Sunday Times column, not from last Sunday, from the Sunday before, the last Sunday in February. It was entitled, "Varadkar's Leadership is Draining the Life and Soul from the Party," because although he doesn't talk specifically about this issue, I think Gary Murphy puts together a really, really good analysis of the problems and the failings, the aimlessness, for the want of a better word, of Leo Varadkar's leadership of his party. However, back to Micheál Martin and back to the 2020 election. Because though it may have inadvertently resulted in making him Taoiseach, by any impartial measurement, the 2020 Fianna Fáil general election campaign was a disaster. The "we'll under-promise but we'll over-deliver" approach completely misread the public mood. At the precise moment when centre-ground voters wanted big, bold changes of policy on housing and health delivery, Martin's inner team of advisers and officials delivered a manifesto that was a mishmash of bland, incrementalist micro-policies. It was a manifesto that was bereft of any coherent or overarching narrative. Recall, by the way, that this was the manifesto, as I said earlier, into which all resources and energies had to be poured to the detriment of anything else. While Martin's intention was probably to offend nobody by offering a little something to everyone, the lack of a clear campaign message for change led to episodes like the pensions age debacle in the first week of the election, when the party seemed to be remaking key policies on the hoof. Yet, despite all his political missteps and grave strategic errors in the years leading up to the election, Micheál Martin still became Taoiseach. His personal ambition was fulfilled, even if that was to come with the price tag of further blurring the lines between Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael. I am 100% willing to accept that this was not his intention or his plan. I can even understand why Micheál Martin's closest supporters and allies resent people like me questioning his interest in the party's future. But they should understand that our criticism is born out of a genuine concern that the Fianna Fáil party is on the cusp of disappearing as a progressive, centrist political force. Because my central thesis is this: Fianna Fáil's persistently poor poll ratings since 2019 have not happened despite Micheál Martin. They are a direct consequence of the decisions he has made as leader. It's as if those decisions that drove up his personal approval ratings also drove down his party support levels. Because the bounce that party members were told would come as a consequence of Fianna Fáil entering government with Fine Gael and the Greens has not materialised. And while Fine Gael is holding on to the support of the reduced number of voters who backed it in 2020, the same cannot be said of Fianna Fáil. Now, there have been occasional poll numbers showing the party at its election 2020 level of support. And again, recall that this was Fianna Fáil's second worst ever election result and was a drop back down from the result it got in 2016. Indeed, the majority of the polls that have been taken since that election, that was in February 2020, show support for Fianna Fáil hovering at somewhere between 4 to 5 points below the 2020 election level, which was 22.2%. Now, let me get into this in a bit more detail. And if you go to my website, you'll find that I put together a chart. Because of the 92 national newspaper polls published since the end of February 2020, only 14 show Fianna Fáil at its 2020 election level of support or slightly above. And by the way, it should be noted that all of these were BNA polls for the Sunday Times, and BNA is a polling company that tends to overstate the Fianna Fáil level of support. There's a kind of a house trends bit of work that has been done by the Irish Polling Indicator that shows that BNA tends, when you compare it to the mean, tends to overestimate Fianna Fáil support by 3, maybe up to 4%. Not in every single poll, but in many of them. And don't forget the BNA poll that was published at the start of the general election campaign in 2020 suggested Fianna Fáil was on course to get 32%. At the end of the day, it got 22%. By the way, I'm not saying that the BNA was wrong. It's quite clear that Fianna Fáil did lose support during the election campaign. However, I don't think they lost anywhere near 10 points, as BNA would suggest. But that's a separate matter, and I don't want to get bogged down in the house trends of various polls. And that's why I've looked at all 92 polls across that period. Now, far more worrying for Fianna Fáil, 32 of the 92 polls show Fianna Fáil at 15% or lower. Just in the same way as there are a group of polls that tend to overstate Fianna Fáil, many of those 32 polls, not all of them by any means, by the way, are from polling companies who tend to slightly understate Fianna Fáil, usually by up to 2%. As I say, have a look at the chart. I've actually graphed it, and you can just see, I think, just off the top of my head, just from memory, if you look at the 92 polls, 14 of them had Fianna Fáil at 17%. 12 of them had Fianna Fáil at 15%. The next highest figure is 10 of them, which had Fianna Fáil at 20%, which most Fianna Fáil people would say is a great result. Problem is, it's still 2.2% below its second worst ever election result. So I think it's something just that's that again, which it's just looking at Fianna Fáil's polling problem. So while entering government has not helped Fianna Fáil to retain its 2020 level of support, never mind to grow it, it has helped grow Micheál Martin's approval ratings. Now, this shouldn't be surprising, as Micheál Martin was a very good Taoiseach, especially when you contrast his approach with Leo Varadkar's. But even at a base level, even taking it in comparison with any of his predecessors, I think Micheál Martin proved himself to be an assiduous, hardworking, committed Taoiseach. I think he was primus inter pares. I think he did fulfil the role of chairman more so than chief. In the words, I think it's Brian Farrell's book, and analysing the role of the Taoiseach. So I've no doubt that he was a very capable and competent Taoiseach. However, the idea that Micheál Martin can now turn things around astonished her, as he appears to have advanced in his Cordiafold dinner speech from last October, is in my view fanciful. Because like it or not, the end of the Martin era is nigh. By the end of this month, Micheál Martin will have been party leader for longer than Charlie Hoy. 12 years, 3 months. If Micheál Martin were to continue as leader to next year's locals and European elections, he would have just about outlasted Jack Lynch and Bertie Ahern, maybe within a month or so either way. And at that point, only De Valera will have served longer as leader of Fianna Fáil than Micheál Martin. To be fair, Dev served over 33 years as leader, and I don't think even the most dedicated Martinite thinks their man can do that. But my point here is not that longevity or survivability is critical. After all, one of Fianna Fáil's most consequential leaders, probably its most consequential leader, Sean Lamass, was leader of the party for just over 7 years. The point here is that Martin has had a full term to fix his party's problems over 12 years, and that no party looks to its outgoing leader to set its course and trajectory for the following decade. That is the next leader's job. And it is well past time, in my view, that Fianna Fáil started to think and plan for that. Fianna Fáil, for 12 months, maybe even longer, has had a period of no internal division, no internal strife, no internal rows, well, minor ones. And the party's support has not increased. The party's problem isn't internal discussions. The party's problem, in my view, is a lack of them. So whether it happens this year or next year, it is inevitable that Micheál Martin will move on. Indeed, looked at from Micheál Martin's personal perspective, the party has just about fulfilled its functions to him. The party made him Taoiseach, and if rumours are correct, it may even yet make him an EU commissioner. It has fulfilled its duties to him, but what about his duty to the party? And what about his duty to ensure that it has a future? Martin's skill as party leader in recent years has been in disassociating his own approval ratings, not just from his party's poll ratings, but from the consequences of his decisions. And that is not the skill set that the party needs at the helm today, if it is to have a future. What it does need is a new leader who is untainted by the mistakes of the latter half of the Martin era, but can approach the task with the same vigour, drive and courage that Martin demonstrated in his early years as leader, and that has to be acknowledged. A new leader who recognises and accepts that the challenge is more daunting than it was over 12 years ago when Micheál Martin first accepted it. Fianna Fáil isn't going to get a Holly Cairns, and it isn't going to get a Holly Cairns bounce, but it has within it the capacity to fix its own problems and to regain and reconnect with a radical approach that no longer sees us as just a spokesperson for the civil service, but that sees it as the spokesperson for the people who it represents and who vote for it. That's the challenge for Fianna Fáil, and I believe the sooner it gets to grips with that, the better. Okay, that's this episode of Mooney and Politics podcast finished. It is my plan over the coming days to produce another one, looking more in more detail at what's happening in Northern Ireland, to looking at the problems facing the DUP, and to looking at Westminster's attitude to the North. I mentioned at the outset that there were a number of political changes and a number of major developments over the last 6 to 7 weeks. One of the ones I didn't mention at the start, but I think it actually does have an influence and does have a bearing, and it's certainly one I intend to look at maybe in 2 weeks' time, 3 weeks' time, is what's happening in Scotland as the decision by Nicola Sturgeon to stand aside. And that what that means for the SNP. I have long argued that the SNP was the most successful political party on these islands. Having said that, it was not a party without problems or a party without difficulties, and it now must resolve those. I should have said at the outset, this has been recorded at around 4 o'clock on Monday, the 6th of March. And with any luck, I will have another podcast to you before the end of this week, but failing that, definitely this day next week. So in the meantime, until the next episode, take care and we'll talk to you soon. Bye bye.